you can start using or taking the gratitude practices that you already have and take them to another level, and your gratitude muscles will improve. And when you do that, we're actually rewiring our brains and making our brains more conditioned to being able to notice the good that exists around us. And when we do that, we increase our trait gratitude. So when we do that, our state gratitude, it will tend to, you know, vacillate around a higher level of happiness when we experience things. And that enables you and I to spend more time thriving and less time feeling like we're surviving.
Welcome to the Gratitude Podcast on www.georgeandbenta.com, where you'll hear a new story each week that will inspire more gratitude in your own life. Our mission is to inspire 100,000 people to discover how to feel gratitude and live a happy life through the amazing life stories of our successful guests and their actionable tips. And now, the host of our podcast, Georgian Benta.
Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Today with us, we have a special guest. He walked away from a career as an electrical engineer after having what you'd call an aha moment. And he now works with a happiness company called Gratitude at Work, and has spoken throughout Canada and the US, sharing his simple gratitude at work philosophy. He just published his book, his first book, Surviving to Thriving, the 10 Laws of Grateful Leadership, to help realize his dream of 1 billion happier people. That's amazing, isn't it? When he's not researching or teaching the benefits of living a grateful life, he can be found golfing or running, or trying to outwit his two grown children, Nick and Steph, who think his whole gratitude thing is a midlife crisis. Helping us today to spend more time thriving and less time surviving, I am pleased to introduce you to storyteller, leadership mentor, and recovering engineer, Steve Foran. Welcome, Steve.
Georgian, thank you. Thanks very much for having me with you. And thanks for the work that you're doing and spreading the message of gratitude through your podcast and your work.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for sending the books in advance and for giving me enough time to read it and to actually understand better what's going on with the book and what you're trying to do with it, and for your inspiration about leadership. And I think we could go into that at first, because the book is somehow about leadership, but there might be listeners of ours that think that this might not be for them, and you have a different perspective on this, and I would love for us to start with that.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I believe everyone is a leader, Georgian. You know, and I think in the book I might have said a few times, I don't care if you're the CEO of Coca-Cola, or you're a teenager babysitting kids down the street, you are a leader, and. To me, if you were to ask people, what is leadership? You ask 50 people, you would probably get 50 different answers. But if I was to try to get it down to one word, I would reduce it to influence, right? And how we influence both ourselves and others. And our mindset. This is where the connection to gratitude is. Our mindset, your mindset, the mindset of your listener, the person who's listening to you, your mindset, it really has a disproportional influence of how you show up in the world. And when we talk about mindset is really the beliefs and the attitudes that we hold that influence how we make sense of the world around us, right? And mm-hmm. Gratitude is the it's the character strength, it's the character skill, it's the strength that has the greatest influence on having a thriving mindset, right?
Mm-hmm. But how does gratitude influence leadership?
How does it? Well, you know, when we're in a grateful frame of mind, there is positive, negative, and neutral in the world around us at all times, right? And our brains, are very hyper-focused, very, very sensitive and attuned, and we pay attention to all the negative. Like, we are just so focused on negative, and that is, you know, has come from how humans has evolved as a species, that we're, you know, in order to survive, we needed to be, whether it was in the jungle or the forest or the woods or the desert or wherever it was we existed, if there was danger around, we needed to be, our brains were trained to be very sensitive to it so that we didn't die, so that we continued to exist as a species. And that hasn't changed. But we have evolved a lot as a species, where at every minute, you know, death isn't around the corner, but our brains are still wired that way. And when our brains are in that survival mode, right? When we're stuck in that survival mode, we effectively shut down the executive function in our brain. And, you know, not completely, but essentially, you know, this is our ability to think critically, to think about different alternatives, to make better decisions. It shuts that down, and we move into fight or flight. And we don't make the best decisions when we're in that survival mode. And some of the work that social science has found right now is that of the positive character strengths, you know, there was one study that looked at, well, there's 24 positive character strengths under Martin Seligman's PERMA model of human flourishing. And a former PhD student of his, Scott Kaufman, looked at, okay, you know, I kind of say he mused, I can't work on 24 positive character strengths. What's the one? If I could only work on one, what is the best predictor of a thriving life, right? And having a thriving mindset to do that. And George, no surprise to you, it's gratitude, right? And so gratitude is the thing that enables you and I, and you who are listening, to be able to, in the midst of all the chaos, in the midst of even in the midst of tragedy or negative, the daily negative events, as you know, the car breaks down on the way to work, or you're late, or someone is late for an important meeting or a deadline, or someone is sick in the family, or there's a financial challenge with someone, these things are not going to disappear because you're grateful or build a grateful frame of mind. But when these things happen, a grateful frame of mind reframes how you and I are able to make sense of it, and we're able to make better decisions, and therefore we're able to be better leaders. We're better able to influence those around us in those situations. And I would argue that it's in those times of crisis, like when nothing seems to be going right, that we're able to have that sense of we know where we're going, and that there's hope, and that there's a better place as we move through the challenge that we have. And gratitude is that's the tool to really help us do that.
Definitely. I was actually thinking about how I see a powerful leader. And I was thinking about these kinds of problems that we have as a society, as, I don't know, in different leadership situations. And when I think about a powerful leader, I think about someone who's able, who has the resourcefulness necessary to give people another vision, another possibility, something that they can hope for and they can fight for, or not fight, and it's not my favorite word, but to look forward to and to work towards. And that's quite interesting. And I think that actually there is something that goes on inside that leader, maybe naturally, or maybe something that that particular leader was able to develop in time. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. Like a year ago, almost a year ago to the day, we were, it was a week out from a year ago today, our son, who just turned 28, was having his right hip replaced. Like, and he's 28 years old getting a hip replacement done, and he's in good health and all these things. And as a father, you know, your mind can quickly start going into places like, what if something really bad happens during the operation? What if it doesn't turn out? What, like, and then quickly to the extreme, what if he doesn't wake up from, you know, going under anesthetic? And, you know, and so very quickly our mind can go to these places. And so I caught myself in this, and it's like, whoa, hold that now, Steve. Where's the good here? And, you know, I'm not grateful that Nick had to have a hip replacement when he was 28. But in the midst of that challenge, it was like, I know there's another vision, another future out there for it. Where's the good here? And I start looking around, and it's like, I made a list. I wrote it down, you know. He's got, like, one of the best surgeons in the country. The technology with hips are getting better and better all the time. He's probably going to need another one, but maybe only one more in his lifetime. He's in really good health. He's got a positive attitude. So that's really going to help him in terms of him coping with it and deal with it. He's got a wife who's very supportive. We've got healthcare. It's not going to cost him anything. He's been able to get it scheduled quickly at a time convenient for him between the end of his school and when he's got his work starts. And I just start going, oh, and it just starts, it changes how I look at that situation and how I'm able to deal with it. And not just myself, but the others around me, his sister, his mother, his grandparents, and all the people were able to take the focus off what, you know, isn't an ideal situation, but be able to reframe it to see that there is good here in amongst all this.
Beautiful. And the amazing thing about this is that you being a leader, like the leader of your pack, of your family, they will see this and they will model this. And when situations that are similar to this will happen, they will react the same way. They will see that there is this possibility, at least, to react a different way and to do things differently. And I think this is amazing about leadership, empowering others to do the same.
Yeah, it really does. And I liken leadership, if you the visual or the analogy is the, you know, a thermostat on the wall, you know, that sets the temperature in the room. And typically there's also a thermometer on it that responds to whatever it reads the temperature. And as you think of yourself, you know, are you the thermostat? Are you the one that sets the temperature? Or are you a thermometer? Do you just respond to the temperature? Like whatever the atmosphere or the environment in the room is, if people are negative, the thermometer, they're going to jump in and be a thermometer. They're just going to go along with whatever it is. The thermostat, that's the leader. They're going to change that. And you know, today one of my gratitudes was the healthy example our daughter sets through her exercise and nutrition. And she is just so, she's a leader because she's influencing me and how I think of how I exercise and how I eat and my nutrition. And so this idea of leadership I really believe it. Everyone is a leader because we're influencing people by how we act. And gratitude has just a powerful way to cause us to act in a way that that influences people in a very positive way.
That's so true. And I love this perspective about each of us being a leader and influencing others. And it's so true, because when you think about the five people that you surround yourself with most, mm-hmm. you are so influenced by them one way or another, and they don't even know. And you are in the same situation with other people as well. Like, you are influencing them and you have no idea that you are. And that's so interesting that we're doing these kinds of things and we have no idea.
Yeah,
so basically we are leaders in different situations without us actually being aware of it.
Yeah, without even being aware of it. And that's the thing. And I remember it's when our kids were small. That's when I realized you're a leader all the time. You are influencing people by your behaviors, because, hey, make sure you bring your plates off the table. And then one day I said, well, Dad, you never take your plate off the table. You never clear your dishes from the table. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Exactly. And this thing is powerful. Like, when we realize that we are influencing others, and especially the ones we love, this puts us in a position of power and of choice. And we realize that it's not just about ourselves. And I think if I'm feeling my audience correctly, I'm guessing that there are many of our listeners that wouldn't do things for themselves, but they would do them for others. Mm-hmm. And I think that, for instance, starting a gratitude practice, if you're not motivated to do it for yourself, you can find a very powerful motivation in doing this for yourself, so that the people around you, the people that you love, will benefit. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's very interesting. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for those around you. No question. And it will have an it has an influence on it. And the research out there, it demonstrates that, because gratitude has this ability to affect those around us. Because when you feel it inside, there's this internal feeling. But then the flip side of it, when I'm grateful, when you are grateful, you have this internal need to say, express it. I just call it say thank you. And it could be smiling. It could be shaking someone's hand, giving them a hug. It could be taking them out to dinner. It could be spending time with them. It could be saying thank you very much. And that makes other people feel valued. It makes other people know that you notice them, and it gets them aware. It helps them be other focused. And it definitely helps others. Definitely.
That's a wonderful perspective and a powerful one. The fact that when it's about expressing gratitude, it can be a smile, it can be shaking a person's hand, it can be something really simple. It doesn't have to be all the time saying thank you. And I think this is important to know. For instance, I'm an introvert. At times I feel very at ease with saying thank you and being more outwardly oriented. But at times I just put an emoji, or I don't know, all kinds of other ways of expressing thankfulness that aren't particular to saying those particular words. And I think this is a very useful tip for our listeners to know that you can express gratitude in other ways. And I always talk about the fact that We've been taught to say thank you, but we weren't all taught to actually feel it and to actually express it like we mean it. We say thank you because it's polite, but we don't always actually feel grateful for that particular thing that we are thanking for.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the other piece of that expression of thank you is just being genuine with it. That is so important, as you said, you know, being genuine. Because if I say thank you to you, to a coworker, to my wife, to a friend, and I'm not genuine, they're gonna know, right? People just know if you're doing something that's either rote or to get something back. You know what I mean? If you do something to get something in return, people are going to know it, and it isn't going to come through as genuine, and they're not going to feel this gratitude. And if I'm expecting something in return, then I'm not doing it out of gratitude. I'm doing it out of exchange. It could be a nice thing to do, but it's not being done from gratitude. And as soon as I get disappointed because someone might not say thank you back to me for something, I need to be able to let go of that. Right? It's like, Steve, were you expecting something in return for whatever it is you did? Or because if you were, you didn't do that out of gratitude. You did it out of something else where you were expecting something, and then we turn it into a transaction. When we do it out of gratitude, to me, it really raises it to a higher level. It transforms whatever we do, however we show up in life, from something transactional to something transformational.
Wow, that's beautiful. From something transactional to something beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
And I wanted to add something to saying just the words, because if we overuse some words and we don't have any feeling behind them, it actually disempowers the words. Like they lack the meaning, and they can go stale. They can go like you would get to not feel the gratitude when other people are saying thank you to you as well. And I think that's a danger. That's something that we should be aware of and try to do something about, because it will just rob us of many opportunities for gratitude. But I wanted to also get back to what you said about how our brain works. And I was actually thinking about this a few days ago, about the fact that it's actually not too long ago that we've been in the wilderness. Like right now, most of us, we are living in cities, and there are no threats, like real threats, animals or surviving winter or, I don't know, things of this nature. But it was just 100, 200 years ago that we were in those situations. So it's actually not that far behind us, this kind of environment in which we lived. And these ways of surviving the world had their purpose, and they are important. The only thing is that we can choose to go from surviving to thriving, right? And I know that you have a hierarchy on this, and I would love for you to let us know more about the steps from surviving to thriving.
Sure. And you're right. There is still, you know, there are times in one's life where you may get find yourself in a situation where it is survival because of the situation you find yourself in. And there's people who live in our world today who would experience it on a more regular basis. But in human history, you know, all the social measures of what would constitute surviving, it's at its lowest levels in human history in terms of these social factors, in terms of people that have, you know, died by violent deaths, and people who don't have access to clean water, and those types of things. That it's, we're, as humanity, we're making very good progress. And even thousands of years ago, when we spent more time in the wilderness, and this ancient part of our brain had this influence, at the same time, our brain was building and growing and developing, I'll say the gratitude muscles, because because humans socialized. They congregated in packs, and they worked in groups and communities. And I remember that reading something of an anthropologist, and someone asked them, "How do you know you've found an early civilization of communities?" And I'm thinking they're going to say, clay pots or dishes and things like that. And she said, no, that's not it. We look for someone who has a healed femur, the bone in your leg, because 10,000 years ago, if you had a broken leg, if you didn't have a community of people to support you, you're gone, right?
Wow.
And so this sense of community, and that is built into our brain too. So as we've evolved as a species, this gratitude, it is a natural part of our human existence and our connection with each other. The survival piece, that amygdala, that ancient part of our brain, it can just have an undue influence on us though, and override it. And when it does, we don't always make the best decisions. Regarding the hierarchy of leadership, as I describe it, from surviving to thriving, and I'll just use a one word to kind of categorize each. But at the bottom of the hierarchy is surviving, and this is where life is. It just feels like drudgery all the time, and in all areas of life. The next level is striving, which is, it's just hard work. It just, everything feels hard. And then if we can break through that, we get to a place, a hierarchy that I call arriving. And that's, it's a good place. Sometimes it might feel we slip back into striving or surviving. And at the top of the hierarchy is thriving. And this is where life is a playground. Like, you feel like you're, I don't know, back in 6 or 7 years old playing, you know, whether it's in the schoolyard or out after, and just every life is a playground. And that exists for all of us. And just to be able to choose to get there. And what I see is just so many people stuck in this unending cycle of survival and never feeling that they have enough to be able to thrive. And there is this, I talk about it in the book, this invisible barrier. And this barrier is just, if you can hold on to a belief that I have much to be grateful for and I'm worthy. And, you know, so for your listeners, is I believe, even though we have never met, that you have much to be grateful for and you are worthy. And if you can hold that belief, it opens the possibility when you ask the question, what am I grateful for? That you can begin to start seeing these things. And just one last clarification. When I say, I believe that, you know, you are worthy and that you have much to be grateful for, I'm not saying you should be grateful for this, this, and this, and this. I just have this intrinsic belief that you have much to be grateful for, and encourage you to hold that, even though it might be hard to believe, Because sometimes you might think, really? Me? I don't know if that applies to me. I challenge you to hold on to that belief. Just believe that you have a lot to be grateful for and then go looking for it.
Beautiful. Well, what I was thinking about is the cover of your book. And I think that's such a powerful and beautiful visual representation of what you just described. Can you share with our audience what it is and how you thought about it? Because I think it's just brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a very simple cover, white, and I'll send you a photo of it, and I'm not sure if you can include it with your with your podcast, Georgian, but I'll do that after. But very simple white cover, words in the middle like surviving to thriving, but at the bottom, coming up from the bottom of the page, is a green balloon filled with helium with a nice green string on it that attaches. So it is coming up, and at the top is a black heavy ball on a black chain hanging down that weights us down, and then feeling like if it's you had this, you know, ball and chain around your ankle, that you were trapped by it, and where the balloon is this uplifting possibilities and joy and happiness and really letting us thrive.
I think this is such a great image for our feelings, and for whenever we feel down, it's actually really funny that it matches so well. We feel like there is a weight on our heart, on our soul, on our on us, basically, and we feel heavy. We feel like there aren't many possibilities for us, and we feel burdened. And when we see the possibility of us letting go of those feelings that are really weighing us down, it's like seeing that they are somehow they are not us. They are just things that we can choose to hold or to let go. And when we think about the balloon and the fact that we can fly, we can feel uplifted by our feelings by just choosing them, that's for me, it's a really beautiful way of putting like a painting that can tell you 1,000 words, like that's worth 1,000 words. And I think it's so similar.
Thank you for sharing that, because it's that frame of grateful frame of mind, it doesn't make the challenges disappear, right? I mean, it's like the surviving mindset is that, you know, when life is drudgery, we feel crushed by the challenges and all the things that can happen in life, and they weigh us down. When we have a thriving mindset, when we spend more time thriving, we still have challenges. We don't let them define us. Right, that's the big challenge. They don't define our life. We don't see them as permanent. We're able to make sense of them in different ways, so that we're better able to deal with them. And when we can do that, we can actually move through them quicker. And sometimes some of the challenges, they can take time to do that. And we need to be able to give ourselves permission to do that as well too, because, you know, this spectrum I have, I usually would say, you know, here's the hierarchy. You know, where do you spend most of your time? Because there might be parts of your life where you feel like you're thriving, and other parts where it feels like, oh, I just feel like I'm surviving here. And, you know, and the idea is, how can we spend more time thriving in all areas of our lives? And just encourage you to hold on to that belief that you are worthy and you have much to be grateful for.
I love it. It's such a such an important belief to have and to start with. And since we got to this point, I wanted to ask you about our defaults when it comes to gratitude. I know that we have there's actually a scientific term, and I found out from your book that's called trait gratitude and state gratitude. Can you talk a little bit about these two?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'll talk about state gratitude first, and that is it, at any instant in time, your emotional state, and so it can go up and down. It varies as good things, bad things, and all this good thing, bad thing. It's how we subjectively interpret it and make sense of it. Our feeling of gratitude goes up and down based on that, and that can change and vary based on how things are. The real kind of important one, though, is this dispositional gratitude or trait gratitude. And this is a characteristic that we have within us. And it's our inclination to be grateful in any certain circumstance. And if you think on, say, a scale of 0 to 10, we all have a natural disposition to be grateful. You know, more optimistic people would have a higher natural disposition to be grateful, maybe a 7 or an 8. Someone who might be less optimistic or pessimistic, they might have a lower disposition to being grateful, like a 3 or a 4. And some of the research out there, you know, we know that women tend to have a higher disposition to being grateful. Older people tend to have a higher disposition to being grateful. And so the real neat thing here is this the higher the disposition to being grateful, the state gratitude, it varies around a higher level. So your lows aren't as low, your highs, well, they would be higher. But you go up and down. Your state gratitude would vacillate around a higher level of happiness or thriving. And it's not this hedonistic happiness. It's more of a ever-present just joy and happiness and contentment. Now the good thing is that trait gratitude, we can change it. You can start using or taking the gratitude practices that you already have and take them to another level, and your gratitude muscles will improve. And when you do that, we're actually rewiring our brains and making our brains more conditioned to being able to notice the good that exists around us. And when we do that, we increase our trait gratitude. So when we do that, our state gratitude, it will tend to, you know, vacillate around a higher level of happiness when we experience things. And that enables you and I to spend more time thriving and less time feeling like we're surviving.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We are capable of changing our trait gratitude.
Yeah.
So this
absolutely.
Is very, very important for our listeners to hear and to be aware of, and to choose to do things that can lead to that. And I'm happy that this podcast is I think a really good resource for that. But I wanted to ask you also, from your book, from the 10 laws of grateful leadership, what is your favorite law?
The first one.
Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, the first one, it has to do with my aha moment. And the first law of grateful leadership is no one is self-made. And I grew up the oldest of five, had a, you know, responsibility was a big, an important value to me. If you're going to make something happen in your life, you do it. Like, you can't blame other people for your failures. And if other people are unsuccessful, they can't look around and blame society for it or anyone else. And so, you know, if I saw someone on the street panhandling, looking for money, I'd be like, you get a job, get your own money. I worked hard for this. I earned this myself. This is my money. That was my mindset. Always positive and nice, but very judgmental. And then I had the realization that it was if my life was handed to me on a silver platter. And you know, yes, you still have to work. But if you look, as I looked at any success that I had, no matter where it was, the fingerprints of so many people were all over it, whether it was my parents through my upbringing, my wife, my teachers, work colleagues, supervisors, clients, just it was like, oh my goodness. And when I, so seeing my life, it felt like it was handed to me on a silver platter. I saw it as a gift. And when I saw my life as a gift, and I mean every aspect of it, it just brought this overwhelming sense of gratitude to me. So if, and so that's why I say this is the, my favorite, the most important one, because if I can't see my life as a gift, now I'm going to frame it the other way. If I can see my life as a gift, and if you can see your life as a gift, the whole shoot and match, the good, the bad, the ugly, if you can see the whole thing as a gift, gratitude is going to come easier to you. If you can't see your whole life as a gift, that's okay. I start with what part of your life do you see as a gift? Start there and build. And because if someone has a hard time with that, the rest of it is going to be really difficult.
That's such a great idea, to start small, to start with a part of your life, even if you feel that life isn't a gift yet. Mm-hmm. To start just with that part of your life that you feel blessed with, and build from that. It's very beautiful and powerful, and it's more natural than to try to to feel grateful for life. And when you actually feel the exact opposite about life, and it makes it much more feasible. And I think that's an important part. So, gratitude seeker, think about it. What part of your life are you grateful for? What was that part of your life that makes you think that life is a gift? And just think about that. And while you do that, Steve, we are nearing the end of our time together, and I wanted to ask you, where can our audience find your book? Where can they get it? And where can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, thanks for that offer. To the listeners, I would encourage you to take Georgian up on his question, his challenge that he asked you about what part of your life. Do that, and just keep expanding that and growing on it and working with it. The book 10 Laws or Surviving to Thriving, the 10 Laws of Grateful Leadership, is available on Amazon. That's the easiest way to get it. And if you want to get in contact with me, the best way is through my website at gratitudeatwork.ca.
Beautiful. So I really recommend this book. I have two copies. I read it. My girlfriend also, and she's really excited about it and she loved it. So I really recommend it, and it really empowers you and makes you think about how you are influencing other people, how you are actually a leader, even if you don't realize it, and how much gratitude can actually help you be a better leader and a better human being, which I think is, at least for me, it's a goal in life.
Yeah, bang on. Really appreciate you having me on the show, Georgian. Very good questions, and thanks.
My pleasure. Hey, Gratitude Seeker, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this interview. I really appreciate it. And if you could think of one person that would also benefit from it, share it with them. It might actually be the inspiration that they need to make their day or maybe even their life much better. Thank you so much once again. This has been Georgian Benta. Don't forget to keep seeking and spreading gratitude.